coming at you very disoriented today.
Uh-oh.
And I want you to know why.
What's new?
What's new, pussycat?
Oh, my God. let's not do this. Sorry.
And that'll do it for this week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I woke
up. You want
up,
content, you get content.
And you'll like it. I woke up a short time ago from a very vivid dream in which I witnessed the murder of the Notorious B.I.G.
Is it because you were watching the Olympics last night and that commercial for
yes,
that new?
Yes, that's exactly why. That's literally exactly why. Every single break. Every break.
Mamma Mia 2. Yeah.
I know. Mamma Mia 2. That's got to be a big thing for your household.
Can't wait.
I would assume. It's going to be.
Can't wait with my Swedish wife. Yeah.
It's going to be fantastic. But no, and it wasn't the murder of a Biggie the way the murder of Biggie actually went down. It was like if Biggie was murdered in The Godfather. He was like sitting at the counter at a diner and a guy walked in behind him and was like, "Bop bop, have a nice dream," that kind of thing.
Dude, so not, they have a nice dream.
No. But that would have been
ironic. Is it because it was all a dream?
It was all a dream. But yeah, I'm still like in that. You know, sometimes when you wake up from a dream and you're just like, man, it felt so real. I'm still kind of in that.
I never remember my dreams. It's a weird thing. Like, I go through phases.
Sometimes I do. Like, I'll go through a few months where I do, and then other times just not at all.
Yeah, and my wife, she always remembers her dreams all the time.
Really?
All the time. And she always wakes up, like, upset at me or upset at something that I did in her dream. Like, and it's like, I have no recourse here. You know?
And then you took off your energy mask and you were Cameron Diaz.
Yeah.
It's
been a dream.
Yeah, I don't know. There was another one that I had last night that was super weird also. And I remember waking up from that and thinking, oh, I got to remember that. But then I had this one about Biggie and I'm shook. I'm shook from it.
Are you?
I'm shook, brother.
You're some of the shook ones.
Some
part
of the
two.
Shook ones. it's cray.
Cool.
So anyway, Biggie's still dead, in case you're all wondering.
Yeah. Or is he?
In case you're wondering. So hey, welcome inside the 123rd episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, brought to you by the good folks over at Purple Row. We actually got a solicitation the other day through I built a website for some. You've got a website,
yeah. Right? Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So, and I built one, just like put stuff in my
AnthonyCMasterson.com.
Yeah. Mine is TylerMon.com. What is AnthonyMasterson.com?
It's a photography guy. He got it first. I don't know.
Let's go look at him. He's probably better than you. Photography and films.
See, there
the
you
second
go.
Picture up there is food. I already don't respect
that. Yeah, pass. Yeah.
Hard pass.
Cool. Just go on Instagram. Yeah.
But I built a website and there's a contact page on it. And it's like, you know, radio clips, TV clips, writing stuff, and a contact page. Like, that's it. It's very basic. But somebody submitted an email through the contact page asking if we wanted to move the PDP over to their network of podcasts. And it didn't seem like they had just been spamming people who have podcasts. Like, it seems like they sought us out. And I have yet to email them back and say, no, man, I'm happy with the girl we got.
Man got to do with me? I got a man.
So, but yeah, it's very flattering.
It's like the fourth 90s song I've already like.
Yeah, we're on a good roll.
First 3 minutes. Yeah.
It's it's very flattering that somebody else would want us, but we're happy in this relationship with Purple Row. Our eyes ain't going nowhere. This is a committed relationship. Or is it? Dun dun dun. Sorry, I'm eating cereal. So,
good job.
What's going on with you?
Nothing really. Just hanging out.
Okay.
Stuff. Hanging out. Watching no free agents get signed.
Yeah, it's a fun thing. We're gonna talk about that in a little bit. Got a good amount coming up for you on the show today. I won't say a lot, and I won't say it's a good show, but we've got a good amount, and we'll see.
We're not trying to overvalue anything.
Yeah, yet. Exactly. Like, I'm not gonna push this. Like, I don't need to go over the top. But we're gonna talk a little bit about the cold stove, as they say. See what I did there? The fact that the Rockies are somehow like the only team that has signed people, which seems odd. And maybe like a little fitting, like everybody else is in the party and the Rockies are like, nah, we'll still do things the way we've normally done things,
which is not the way they've normally done things.
No, true. That's
totally
is true.
Different to the way they normally done things,
the way everybody else has normally done things. Trump's America, man. Everything's flipped upside down. Terrible. Yeah. And bad.
Nick Foles beat Tom Brady in a Super Bowl.
Exactly. Exactly.
We are in the upside down,
which was actually pretty great. Unfortunately, Alabama still won in college, but yeah, you know, whatever. Can't have it all. The offseason has been strange, and Rockies pitchers and catchers report in less than 1 week. They report on Valentine's Day. So
cute.
Yeah. Pretty adorable. Actually, everybody reports on Valentine's Day, I think. No, there's a couple
less like cute.
There's a few that don't. The Nationals, since they're not going to win a playoff series, they don't need to be there on the 14th. They're going to report on the 16th.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Two days later, they're not going to win a playoff series anyway. So,
because the season will only last about 2 days longer for them anyway. You know,
yeah.
Than the rest of the teams. We'll talk about that. We already covered the murder of the notorious B.I.G. We'll talk a little. We did not record right after the Hall of Fame voting, so we'll talk a little bit about Larry Walker and that type of stuff. It's been an interesting last couple of weeks in Major League Baseball. There are some news items. Before we get into that, Anthony logged on to Skype today and had to like create a new account or some nonsense, but his picture is now a picture from our season together in Myrtle Beach, and my picture is from the off season following that season together in Myrtle Beach when I lived in Australia. So we're really having this conversation in 2010.
Close,
man. I have so many mistakes to correct before they happen. If it's 2010, I have so much stuff I can do better in life.
Yeah, man. You know. We got to warn people about the upcoming apocalypse.
2016, everybody just move out. Avoid it now while you can. Where should we start? What should we start with today?
Well, I don't know. Why don't we start with the fact that the Rockies
have
a lot
Rockies.
Of free agents. They've already signed, of course. We've already been through that, considering we've only done like 3 podcasts in the entire offseason, and one was totally devoted to pies.
Right. The content people crave.
But I will say that, you know, you have spent your first year on the road with the DU men's basketball team, and that takes up a lot of your time. I've done it the last 2 years in Long Beach State with the travel and everything. With a mid-major basketball team, you're going a lot of places.
And God,
you
get
pretty
to
much
go,
constantly traveling.
You get to go good places. Like, you get
and to
be on
to
the
be
West
fair,
Coast.
Yeah, to be fair, the Big West, most of these schools are concentrated in the LA area with a few up near the Bay Area. The Summit League, you're going a lot of really terrible places.
We have one Summit League road trip left in the regular season, and that is to Macomb, Illinois, which is like no joke, is like 3 hours drive from the closest major airport, and that is St. Louis.
Yeah.
So that's great. Macomb, we go to Macomb, we play on a Friday, or do we play on a Saturday? We play on the 24th. So we play on Saturday. Then Sunday there's a lacrosse game. I'm still doing DU lacrosse as well. So Saturday we play, and of course it's a night game. Of course it's not an afternoon game. So we play at 7 o'clock in Macomb, which means game will be over 9:30. We'll be on the bus and out of there by 10:15. We'll drive 3+ hours to St. Louis. So we'll get there by 1 something. I have like a 5:45 a.m. flight back to Denver to do the lacrosse game that day.
So what we're saying is, like, get off our damn backs.
Yeah, people.
Here, you know?
What's wrong with you? Good Lord. Like,
you know what we do during the season? We do a podcast a week.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah.
It has been 4 years. This is how we roll.
You know how much
know
we've gotten paid
now.
For that? Nothing.
Yeah. See, it's not our problem. It's your problem.
This is a you problem. This isn't a me problem. Macomb, Illinois. So that's the last road trip of the regular season. And then we go back to Sioux Falls for the conference tournament. So, yeah, it's really glamorous in the Summit League. But I fly into – to go to Macomb, Illinois, I fly into St. Louis, Missouri. To go to South Bend, Indiana for a lacrosse trip at Notre Dame, I fly into Chicago. So yeah, sure, why not, whatever. And one thing I've noticed about going to the Midwest and the upper Midwest, once you get east of like the Dakotas, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, I have very little idea how anything is laid out. I have like a rough idea. Like, I know Wisconsin and Minnesota, the two states I obviously love the most, given the content on this podcast. Like, I know they're
get a
up
map,
there.
Man. Yeah,
Michigan.
Geez.
I know Ohio is down below it, but like Indiana, Illinois, they're all, I know Iowa is next to Nebraska. They're all like, you could jumble them up, and I probably, if I looked at a map, I would know.
Sure.
But
you
if
would.
You just told me lay these out, I would have no idea. I think it goes Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania from west to east, because I used to live in Pennsylvania and I had to drive through all those garbage states. One day I'm going to apply for a job in one of those states and they're going to be like, we listened to an old episode of your podcast and you called us garbage.
I remember listening to PDP 125 or whatever, where you called our states garbage. So sorry, sir.
Oh,
no
Lord.
Pittsburgh Pirates broadcast for you.
You know. Greg Brown, one of my favorite big league broadcasters, one of the voices of Pittsburgh Pirates. Anywho, so the Rockies have been out there throwing money at free agents.
I think
Brian
still
Shaw.
More than anybody else, maybe the Brewers now have passed them. It's been $114 million that they've committed to free agents.
The Brewers have totally remade themselves, but a lot of that via trade, the Christian Yelich deal, they ship out a lot of talent in that trade. Free agent-wise, Lorenzo Cain, they've spent some money.
Jolie Chassin,
the big acquisitions, Boone Logan. But the Rockies have spent money on multiple players, which seems like nobody has done that this year. What's your take on this? I mean, I've been asked on radio interviews, like, is this collusion? And I mean, the way I describe it is collusion is the active pursuit of an agreement to not sign anybody, right? So that would have had to have been a meeting between all 30 front offices, which everybody came to an agreement of let's not sign players. There has to be some type of communication in which this is something that's been agreed and embarked upon.
Right.
There isn't really such a thing as unspoken collusion because you can't prove that in a court, so it's not really collusion. But this is, I don't know, I do somewhat buy the argument that, like, yeah, we've got a lot of statistically sabermetric-minded front offices now, and they're realizing it doesn't make sense to give out Albert Pujols type of contracts and money to people who aren't going to be productive by the end of them. But there are a lot of young guys out there who are not signed, and it's looking weird.
Well, that's the problem. You're not going to be able to prove it for the most part. And we've had, like, I think Ross Atkins of the Blue Jays GM, he kind of let it a little bit slip at a town hall last week where he said, you know, the days of overpaying for aging players is over. It's like, well, I mean, isn't that the point? Kind of. I mean, the fact is when you get drafted by a Major League Baseball team, you're basically an indentured servant for like 6 years.
7 years they control your rights, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you get arbitration eventually if you get to the big leagues, but if you don't, then you're just kind of screwed. Most of the guys who make their money early, they get made their money from their signing bonuses.
Yep.
So the expectancy is if you become a big leaguer and you get past your initial contract that you make, that when you get into free agency, then you can finally make your money. And with baseball, there's no salary cap, so there's a lot of money to be made. And it's kind of why you do it, why you hang around, to make that money, to get your big free agency, because for most guys, they'll get one shot at free agency, and that's pretty much it. So that's your one chance to make all your money. Some guys do it well. Some guys don't. Some guys like Mike Trout will have two or three shots at a big-time free agency because he signed a big contract early enough in his career. But really, most guys get it once, if they get it at all. And so it's tough to look at the situation right now where there are still so many great players. I mean, everybody's made up their own, you know, unsigned free agent all-star team that you could pretty much put together right now and, you know, maybe they can go beat the troops or something. I don't know however that works. But
put them out there on a bombstorming tour.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really difficult to see that we are literally 6 days from pitchers and catchers reporting and seeing most of the jewels of the free agent market, your Eric Hosmers, your Mike Moustakas, still just sitting there without really any ripples of offers. If we have offers, they're not being made to the public, which is usually something that happens at least a little bit. Some kind of stuff
gets leaked. Thing.
Yeah. Yu Darvish still has not been signed.
Yankees supposedly offered him $120 million and gave him 48 hours to sign. And when he didn't sign, they pulled the contract back. Like, that's bizarre.
That's weird.
Yeah. And that's like the one big thing it feels like that's been out there.
And you're seeing agents now coming forward and making statements, which you never see if their names aren't Scott Boras. You know, Boras always likes to get his name out there in the papers and whatever, and that's fine. That's how he does, and he does a good job with it. But you're seeing other agents come out and say, you know, this is as strange a free agent climate as we have ever seen. I mean, you're looking at, I think Ben Diamond had a great great piece, Baseball Prospectus, I think it was, where he was saying that the revenues for Major League Baseball are as high as they've ever been right now, and the free agent money given out is as low as it has been in 10 years. And that was right when the recession was going on, 7, 8, 9, that area. That so, era. You know, you're seeing a very, very strange departure, and a lot of it comes on the shoulders of the MLBPA head, Tony Clark, who negotiated a very, very poor contract for the MLBPA last time with the CBA just in order to get away from a strike and kind of gave away a lot of the players' rights. But that's a whole nother thing altogether. Yeah. What sucks, though, is that you are seeing a lot of these guys really just with no shot whatsoever to get their money, and they're not getting any chance, not getting any bites. And that really just – it sets a lot of issues, not just for the big-time guys, your Hosmers or your Darvishes, but the trickle-down effect. I mean, if those guys can't get signed, then fringe big leaguers who are trying to make it back, trying to make their money, trying to, you know, feed their families or whatever, trying to make it back on maybe a one-year deal or something along those lines, they're not even getting sniffed at yet because the big guns have really not been off the free agent market. So usually those guys can be able to get signed once teams either get desperate or see that there's really nothing else left on the market. But right now the market's so flush, you're not going to see some of those guys even have a chance of getting jobs, like maybe minor league deals. And that's pretty much it, which is, you know, those guys can still be competitive and they're still, you know, 31, 32, 33 years old. And you're just not seeing those guys even have a chance to get signed right now. And so it's an issue. We haven't seen in a long time in the free agent market.
You know, it's very strange. The track of the Major League Baseball Players Association throughout history, the MLBPA has gone with labor attorneys, basically, to head up its cause. And
Donald Fehr
is the one. I mean, Michael he's Wiener. The most. Yeah, and Michael Wiener was a fantastic leader for the MLBPA, and unfortunately he passed away from a brain tumor in 2013. He was 51 years old. Since then, the deal that was handed to Tony Clark, I think, was, I don't want to say it was out of shock, but I think he was appointed executive director in December of 2013, which was right after Michael Wiener passed away. And Tony Clark is the type of guy that you would expect to be running the union in the NFL.
Yeah.
He's a former player. He doesn't have a labor law background or expertise in that regard. That's not a shot at Tony Clark. That's just who he is. And to be in a circumstance where you are now having things taken away from you, you're being taken advantage of by the owners. Tony Clark doesn't seem to want to stand up to ownership. He doesn't seem to want to listen to agents who have been longtime allies on the side of the players in these disputes. Donald Fehr, you kind of wonder, Donald, if the players really wanted to make a big splash and somehow get themselves back. Donald Fehr has been the executive director of the NHLPA for a while now, but he was with Major League Baseball and the Players Association there for 25 years, from 1985 to 2009. Kind of wonder if maybe somebody would go to Donald Fehr and be like, "Hey, man, you want to come back and
help us out?
Want to come figure this out for us?"
Well, that was always the weirdest thing, because it was always like these really high-powered attorneys,
right,
who were in charge of LPA, which is the point. You need those guys
exactly
who have that courtroom experience,
right,
in such a high-powered, high-leveraged, high-money situation.
Yeah.
And then you put Tony Clark there for what reason?
Right. I don't know. And Tony Clark did things, you know, to get the players some amenities. Whether it was the way things were scheduled, or guys didn't want to share seats on the bus during spring training. That was actually one of the things.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, hey, look, I got
comforts. That's fine.
I got $30 more on my paycheck. That's great. oh, I'm not going to have Social Security when I'm retired?
Cool. Right, exactly. Yeah. Oh, this is terrific. I voted against this bond issue because I don't believe in paying the government more money. Oh, what's that? I was just cut out of the local fire district because the fire department can't afford to send fire trucks to put out fires at my house. That's bad. Like, I don't really understand. I don't know. And obviously, I come at this on a societal level from a very, very different point of view from a lot of people, but I don't understand the, like, everything is too serious. We're all in. Everybody's all in on all this stuff. And if you're a major league player in this circumstance, having somebody at the head of the union who is not committed to a long-term vision, as it appears. I mean, I remember when they negotiated that deal last time, there were anonymous quotes from owners that were like, we couldn't believe we were getting away with this.
Yeah.
And Tony Clark was just like, yeah, that's fine. Just, you know, better stuff on the sandwich bar.
We want our own seats.
Right.
For spring training.
Right.
That, like, was one of the things that they right. literally argued for. And the owners were like, yeah.
Sure.
Sure.
And here's the thing. I do understand the sentiment because I was a child in 1994, and I understand the idea of, like, these players are making millions of dollars, even the cheapest among them, the guys who aren't making anything. The major league minimum is however much money. That's true. I get it. The major league minimum, by the way, was this year will be $545,000, subject to a cost of living adjustment in 2020 and 2021, by the way. I get it. I understand that. I understand the point of view. But at the same time, that argument doesn't hold water. It's a straw man thing because if you're saying, players should just shut up and play, where does all the money go then? You're okay with the 30 owners just raking in all of that money? The players should get screwed. The money is there. You can't change the fact the money is there. In an ideal world, what the players and the owners would agree to is investing that money in minor league baseball players. If you pay, I saw a stat the other day. If you paid every minor leaguer in every organization $40,000 a year, I think it was, that comes to like $7 million a year.
Yeah. It's
like,
so weird
how
quickly, like, fans will side with ownership on this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Sure. I love rooting for U.S. Steel.
Right.
Like,
exactly. That's what I get.
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, like, why would you not want the players that you root for to make that money? You're rooting for the players. You never go and, like, hold up signs saying, I want Charlie Monfort's autograph.
Yay,
like,
for Dick Monfort's New Jersey number.
Yeah, like, but you see it all the time. It's always these spoiled players.
Right.
But it's never these spoiled owners
right.
who are literally pocketing this record number of money that they have right now,
and
not
in all reality,
out to the players.
Right, and in all reality, not doing much. Like, it's not like they're running businesses in the sense that, like, you know, if you're, we'll take the Monforts as an example. Although I hate taking the Monforts as an example because they didn't do anything to build the
company that they own or run. Now, but...
If you are, if you're, let's think of some other ownership group. I don't know. John Henry or somebody like that at one time, you know, the things that you built in your business career, those are very impressive. And those got you to the point where you could own a baseball team. But those were also like real jobs. Like, you had to do a lot.
Like real estate. Or
right.
Like Jeffrey Loria was an art dealer,
like, which is bizarre. But like, you had to do a lot. Say what you will about Jeffrey Loria. He obviously worked his ass off being an art dealer in order to get to the point where he could afford a baseball team. But when he got a baseball team, like, how much ownership decision making really impact, aside from shedding payroll or adding payroll, ownership decision making doesn't really impact the product on the field in terms of actual gameplay or the way, you know, unless you're George Steinbrenner, the way a team is run in the day-to-day baseball operations side. So these guys, in large part, are sitting back, raking in money, whether it's from MLB Advanced Media, from MLB.com, from MLB TV, advertising revenue, merchandise sales, ticket sales, all that type of stuff. You just want them to have that share of the pie? Like, and these players, meanwhile, have worked their asses off over, in some cases, a decade or more to make it to the major leagues. and they're not supposed to be rewarded for that? Like, the money is there. The money is not going anywhere. And so to fall back on
it's not a money problem.
Right. Yeah. And to fall back on the argument of, like, oh, these players are selfish, they should just do it because they're getting paid a lot anyway. Okay, well, then that just means that you want them to stay at the same level and you want owners to have vastly more money that they don't need and they don't know anything
to add
to
another level of their house.
Right, or exactly.
Like, you know, buy a big-ass boat.
Or put a party deck on the house.
Yes.
Which is probably what I would do. Just party deck.
Because that's what they're doing. Like, they're not giving the money away.
Right.
To players. So they got to use it somehow, you know?
Right. And to be fair, there are decisions that the MLBPA has made that have put themselves in this spot. Obviously, the Tony Clark thing is one thing. The minor league thing, for decades, the Major League Baseball Players Association has sold minor leaguers down the river because they don't care. Once you make it, you think about the guys in the minors, and you think, I had to go through all of that stuff to get here, so they should have to go through all that stuff to get here.
That's how it works in every sport,
it seems like. Right, right. J.P. Breen, who was formerly of Baseball Prospectus, but now does not appear to be anymore, according to his Twitter bio. But J.P. had a tweet thread yesterday, and he said, quote, if major league organizations were truly interested in competing at the highest level in developing homegrown talent, they'd spend enough cash on MILB players so that they can eat healthy, pay rent comfortably, and professionally train year-round without needing to scramble for part-time work. MILB is most valuable to clubs because it's a cost-controlled environment with enough potential labor that they don't have to invest much to get quality production. But if you're really looking for the next, quote, market inefficiency, it's spending money on MILB so fringe guys can become studs. I've talked to so many minor leaguers who talk about skipping meals to save $5 to $10 or who don't train with professional staff in the offseason because they can't afford it or who get hurt because they don't know how to train properly for the MILB grind. To act like that shit doesn't impact player development, especially among teenagers, is ludicrous. And there are some signs that it's changing. Some teams are offering more organizational support, but you know what's not changing? Poverty level paychecks. And that is true. And of course you get the idiots who, there's one dude who just responded, never gonna happen. Okay, nice.
Thanks.
Nice guy.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah.
But it's true. I mean, you and I worked in the Atlanta Braves organization. The Braves had their guys and everybody else could go kick rocks. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
It was Jason Hayward they were into, Freddie Freeman they were into on that first team that I was on in 2009.
Right.
2010, Julio Teheran they were into, Aroldis Vizcaíno they were into, J.J. Hoover they were into. Everybody else, I don't remember a single position player from that team that had any sort of success beyond that year.
Well, no, because they brought in a lot of minor league free agents.
Right.
Guys like Dan Nelson and Jerry Rodriguez and
Mike Jones,
you know,
and the other Mike Jones,
baby. Yeah.
We had two guys named Mike Jones on the same team in the same infield.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's – and Travis Jones.
Oh,
yeah.
And Travis Jones, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. The three Jones alignment.
So, you know, they brought in all of those guys who they didn't care about. They care about the blue chippers. They had the pitching and the rotation, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
And then everybody else, like Matt Krim, or, like, you know, guys like Matt Krim, who was like a 5,000th round pick or whatever by the Braves.
Matt Krim, you know, taught me.
Who's one of the – one of their most successful pitchers of the team in that season. And then but
Anthony
he would
also
have to
called
go
him
back
a soft tossing lefty and he was gonna kill Anthony.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny.
He was like, he threw 87. like come on.
Matt Krim still to this
he
day
had to go work construction in the offseason.
Yeah.
Like get up like 5 AM and go like stand by, you know, by construction cones, like wave people through with holding a stop sign.
Yep. My favorite to this day. My favorite story about a minor leaguer and what he had to do over the offseason, the manager of the 2009 Frederick Keys, Richie Hebner, was a gravedigger.
Literally, yeah.
Was a literal gravedigger over the offseason because these guys don't make money, and that's what people don't understand. And unfortunately, and that was one of the replies to J.B. Breen's tweet, unfortunately, it's an issue that is not apparent to most sports fans, how ludicrous that whole setup is. Because not only are they not making money, but they have no ability to change that for 5 to 7 years-ish if you haven't made a major league roster. So there are a lot of things that the Players Association could and should be fighting for that it's not. One note about Matt Krim. Two stories about Matt Krim, actually. One, I always knew that the guys didn't make much money. And one day, Matt and I were on the bus in Wilmington, Delaware, and we had each gotten our pay stubs, and Matt looked at me. I was sitting in the row in front of him, and he goes, I bet yours is more than mine. And I was like, dude, there is no way that mine is more than yours. I made the most money I ever made in minor league baseball was $1,600 a month.
Whoa, sorry, Mr. Moneybag.
Easy there, Rockefeller. And that was the season before I made that total. So this season, whatever I was making was less. It was my season with you. And so I took out my pay stub. Matt took out his pay stub. We traded them. And swear to God, mine was like $50 more than his. And Matt was like a 30th round pick. So he got no money as a signing bonus. Wasn't going to make it to the big leagues. He ended up playing indie ball for a couple of years. But that was the first time that I really realized, like, God damn, these dudes are doing it because they want to be here. Somebody asked me the other day, like, what is it about minor league baseball that you like? That's what I like about it. The guys are doing it because it's not paying them six figures a year. But you can pay these guys a livable salary in order to make them a better contribution to your organization. And that's something I think the MLBPA should be fighting for. The other story about Matt Grimm, I haven't talked to Matt Grimm in years, but he was like the best philosopher of my time in minor league baseball. And he gave me a phrase that I've used a lot since 2010, which is, quote, "If she was on fire next to a bucket of water, I would kick the bucket over."
Was he talking about his own mother then?
I think so. I always loved it. So anyway, the point of all this being, there's a lot of stuff coming to a head right now between the MLBPA and the major league owners. And the MLB work peace, there has been labor peace in Major League Baseball for as long as it's ever been that way. But that doesn't mean that it's guaranteed. And yes, a collective bargaining agreement goes through 2021. So you would think theoretically, maybe we're going to see this play out on a long-term scale rather than, all right, well, are they going to strike this summer like it's 1994? But just look at these names that are on the free agent market. Rafa Nieves is an agent with the Wasserman Agency. And yesterday he tweeted out, quote, "How far could this team go and how much would it cost? 9 players, 8 position players, 1 designated hitter, a 5-man bench, a 5-man rotation, and a 6-man bullpen. Jonathan Lucroy is your catcher. Eric Hosmer is your first baseman. Neil Walker is your second baseman. Eduardo Nunez is your shortstop. Mike Moustakas is your third baseman. John Jay is in left field. Cameron Maven's in center. Jared Dyson's in right. JD Martinez is your DH. It's a pretty good team. Your rotation is Yu Darvish, Jake Arrieta, Andrew Cashner, Lance Lynn, and Alex Cobb. It's a pretty good rotation.
They could beat Bama.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. They could beat the Browns, obviously. Bud Norris, Peter Moylan, Derek Holland. Greg Holland is among the people in the bullpen, on the bench. Adam Lind is on the bench. Eric Ibar is on the bench. Like, there are good players on this team. And, yeah, are we arguing that Adam Lind and Eric Ibar should be signing 9-figure deals? No, obviously not.
God, no.
But what we're saying is, those guys are signed in virtually any other offseason. We're 6 days away from pitchers and catchers reporting. And it's so bad right now that there are reports that appear to be confirmed that Major League Baseball's Players Association is going to open up its own spring training camp for unsigned free agents as soon as Tuesday. Tim Brown from Yahoo.
Look, I don't know.
Yeah. Tim Brown from Yahoo, who, if you're not following Tim Brown or reading his stuff, he's among my favorite baseball writers. Between him and Jeff Passan, I love Tim
Brown.
But he was the one who first broke it yesterday, that they were preparing to conduct these camps for free agents. And then Jeff Passan said he's been told that it's considering starting camps as soon as Tuesday. That, I mean, yeah, not a great look.
No. And Boris has already said that no Boris clients will be attending any of those potential free agent camps. So, but I don't know. It's
just weird right now.
It is weird. And of course, you know, I would be very skeptical of anybody who says it's not the owners, just because usually if something doesn't make any sense, it's all about money. And who would have
the answer to 99 out of 100 questions?
Yeah. And who would have more impetus to want to hold on to money? The owners. Yeah. So, but at the same time, I can understand, you know, teams not wanting to give Eric Hosmer $200 million.
Right.
Because nobody loves Eric Hosmer more than Eric Hosmer. And if he thinks he's worth $200 million, he's probably not.
Yeah. I understand the argument too. And it's come from the side of, the owners and through the mouthpiece that is Major League Baseball, which I find a little strange. I mean, Major League Baseball, I don't know, MLB itself releasing statements countering the players' claims and saying that, well, the players are holding out for too much money and these are inflammatory agents and yada yada. That seems to walk a very thin line. It's one thing if there was some type of owners group that wanted to release those statements, but for it to come from Major League Baseball itself seems a little dicey. But yeah. I do get there is an argument that people like JD Martinez or people like Eric Hosmer are just holding out for way too much money, and this is crazy money, and you know nobody's going to pay this for anybody and whatever. I get that. But do you think Adam Lind is out there just like, I ain't signing for nothing under this? Like, I doubt it.
Doubt it, but, you know, maybe. You know, it wouldn't be the first time that somebody had delusions of what he was actually worth.
Like, you know.
But like, it's much more likely for a group of owners to be colluding to keep free agent prices down than it is for every single free agent to be completely overflating
right.
their sense of worth.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
It was like, you know, for like, you know, my wedding, like everyone we asked was like, hey, did you have a good time at the wedding? And they all said yes. So either, you know, they had a good time.
Oh, I don't think you
or
even asked
all
me.
300 people are all colluding together to make sure that we think that they had a good time, even when they had a terrible time.
I mean, I don't think it wasn't that good.
Keep in mind, my wife will be listening to this.
Man! And Nicole's parts were good. The parts I had to spend with you weren't good.
Answer to her. Oh, you barely spent any time with me. You were never
true.
Even there.
That's true. I wasn't supporting you at all. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to do most things in life, but especially to understand what exactly is going on with this whole situation. But I would be... If this doesn't break free in the next 6 days before pitchers and catchers report, like if we don't start seeing teams signing guys, man, this is going to be a bizarre start to this season. Because
yeah.
even if we get into spring training, you know, like is Jake Arrieta going to sign with somebody in mid-March and then they're going to throw him out there as the opening day start? You know, like that type of stuff.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
I don't know.
In
man.
Theory.
This is weird. Very weird.
Yeah.
So anyway, your, my, and our Colorado Rockies, they have not done that. They've actually gone out and signed people. Chris Iannetta is back in the mix at the catching position. Brian Shaw, former Nuggets coach, is in the bullpen. Jake McGee is back in the bullpen. You know, the Rockies have actually been going out there and doing things.
Wade Davis?
Wade Davis is in the bullpen.
Gee,
I glossed
okay.
over him. yeah. So they've actually been, like, throwing money at people. And, you know, which I think has benefited the Rockies. I think when you slip in, because they didn't sign any of those guys. Wade Davis got a lot of money, yeah. But I think if you get 2 good years out of Wade Davis, he's paid for himself by the third year. So I don't feel like they gave franchise-changing money to any of those dudes. I feel like they got pretty good deals. And I also don't think... By the end of this offseason, you could be looking at it like, oh, man, look at what they could have gotten these guys for if they just held out until mid-February. Like, I think the Rockies made pretty good deals throughout. And so, if you're the Rockies, I think you're going into next week feeling pretty good about yourselves where you are right now.
Yeah, and that report or whatever that Greg Holland got the exact same offer from the Rockies as Wade Davis did.
Right.
Like, I don't think that's true.
Who knows?
But, I mean, come on. Come on.
But.
Come on.
Where you are right now when you're the Rockies, you're pretty well set with what your team is going to look like on opening day. Whereas if you are, for example, the Kansas City Royals or the San Diego Padres or somebody who's been throwing boatloads of money at Eric Hosmer trying to lure Mike Moustakas or whatever, you're not entirely sure. So I think you feel a little bit better about things if you're the Rockies, and that's a positive going into spring training.
Yeah, and you know what the Rockies – look like right now, I mean, and here's the thing, is that they have options still on the market if they want to improve. I mean, your roster right now is Iannetta at catcher, Ian Desmond / Ryan McMahon at first base, DJ, Nolan, Trevor, then David Dahl or Ian Desmond. You know, if David Dahl exists, you know, Ian Desmond could be playing some left as well, Charlie Blackman, and then a combination of Parra or Tapia in right field,
right.
Then John Gray, Tyler Anderson, Herman Marquez, Chad Bettis, Kyle Freeland in your rotation, with Jeff Hoffman also in the mix as well. I mean, that's a good team. Like, that's a team that is either – I think that's improved from last year.
Yeah.
I mean, you got an extra year with all the starting pitchers. You got another lockdown closer. You you know, catcher position probably be about the same as it was last year with Iannetta and Lucroy, whatever. But if David Dahl comes back, that's like signing a big free agent as well, considering what we know that he can do.
Right.
I mean, but obviously, if you can improve your outfield, you can sign a guy like J.D. Martinez to a smaller deal. You know, maybe collusion could be good for the Rockies and good and bad for anybody else.
Plus, look at the bullpen that the Rockies have built. And that ties into one of the things that we're going to talk about here in a few minutes. But Wade Davis, Mike Dunn, Brian Shaw, Jake McGee, the guys we've already touched on. Adam Ottavino, if Adam gets it back to what we know Adam can be, Adam's ridiculous. Scott Oberg was shoving triple digits in the wild card game in Arizona. Chris Russin, as Anthony put it in our last episode, is like the Swiss Army knife. He's the guy who kind of does everything now. Carlos Estevez, if he can harness what he's got, he's a triple digits guy. One of the names that people forget about is Jairo Diaz. Diaz is another guy who throws triple digits. And Antonio Senzatella is listed right now as one of the guys in the mix in the rotation on the depth chart page at Rockies.com, which doesn't really mean anything. It's just kind of, especially over the offseason, they just sort of build one and put guys wherever they are. But Senzatella, I would think, is going to be in the bullpen, and he is a powerful arm. Like, that's a really damn good bullpen.
Yeah. And, you know, what's kind of why that you see the Pecota projections come out right now,
right,
Baseball Prospectus, and they got the Rockies winning, what, 78 games?
78 games. Last year, they projected 74-88. The Rockies finished 85 wins. The Pecota thing, and Craig Goldstein, our pal from Baseball Prospectus, kind of explained it yesterday, but I'll let you run with the Pecota stuff and why people shouldn't freak out too much.
Well, it's, you know, those, I never really fall into the line of, like, trusting projections or looking at projections. I mean, it's fun. It's good off-season fodder. And, you know, you can see, like, maybe, you know, guys who did a certain thing well last year may got some unlucky, some bad breaks or some good breaks, maybe falling back or taking the next step or something along those lines. I don't really get into projections that much because nobody ever really knows. And it's great to come out and talk about it and whatever, and it's fun. But, like, I never say, oh, well, they thought it was going to be 78 wins and they won 85, so haha, Baseball Prospectus is so stupid. No, that's not how it works. And generally, how it works is that, you know, ask the Kansas City Royals the last few years, Pecota, Fangraphs, or projections, they always, always devalue teams with great bullpens. And the Rockies this year are no different from that.
Right.
You know, every year when the Royals went to the World Series in, what, 2014, the next year, their projections were going to be like there'd be a 500 team or something along those lines, and they won the World Series. The next year is supposed to be bad again. They, you know, were really good, a good team once again. So a team with a great bullpen, Pecota doesn't really have an opportunity to figure it out and kind of plan it going forward because bullpens are always so volatile from year to year. And I think the Rockies have another special situation with the projections don't necessarily know what to do as well with Coors Field anymore, or just in general, they never really have. And so when you see the Rockies getting 78 wins, don't put too much stock into that. And that's not a knock on Baseball Prospectus at all or what they do, because they do a lot of hard work. But don't put a lot of stock into it, because what we've noticed from year to year with these projections is that certain things they don't really know how to gauge.
Yeah.
And how the Rockies, and even Craig Goldstein even said, you know, one team I think the Pecota doesn't do justice to is the Rockies. I mean, they've got a great bullpen in the making. They've got a young starting rotation with one of the best starters they've ever had and John Gray at the top of it. They should be a lot better than what Baseball Prospectus said that they will be.
Yeah. By the way, I haven't watched this yet. I just looked at our Menchies for the first time, but, that actor, Timothy Chalamet, I don't know how to say his last name. Chalamet. There's a video of him apparently, explaining why Larry Walker should be in the Hall of Fame. Is this real? No, it's just a video of him rapping the word statistics. Okay, so anyway, but that transitions us into what we were going to talk about next. Larry Walker is not headed to the Hall of Fame in 2018, as we know. But the trend for Larry Walker is encouraging. Where he made his biggest jump was, I think it was, he finished 11th overall in percentage of the vote. He did finish behind Omar Vizquel, which enrages me. But I think he's moving in the right direction, and that's the most important thing for Larry Walker. The 34.1% is a high for him. The school of thought that has gotten players in recent years a lot more notoriety, I think has put, I think they've put their momentum behind Larry Walker. And for him to be not only above the cut, but well above the cut of staying on the ballot with a couple of years left, especially with how deep this ballot was, and four guys go in, Chipper Jones, Vlad Guerrero, Jim Tomei, Trevor Hoffman. I don't want to say that it's that it looks super likely, but I think we're getting likelier that Larry Walker is going to reach that threshold, because I think the light is finally being shined on the fact that Larry Walker was a really goddamn good player everywhere he played. It wasn't a Coors Field thing. However, Larry Walker said, quote, this is an interview with TSN 690 in Montreal, which was shockingly taken out of context by ESPN. He said, quote, I can't fault myself. I played for a major league team that happened to be in Denver. If that's a problem and that's going to be an issue for them, meaning Hall of Fame voters, then get rid of the team and move it elsewhere if it's going to be that big of an issue. He continued and said, no needles went in my ass. I played the game clean, but I played in the ballpark, and it's almost like Coors Field is my PED. It's frustrating, but at the same time, I get it.
I want like a Southern gospel like choir. Just be like,
Yeah.
Because preach.
Preach, brother.
That is exactly right.
I think he's very much correct in that Baseball Hall of Fame voters are pretty lazy. I mean, I think over the – not the most recent generation, because I think the generation of writers that are doing it now are taking it a little bit more seriously. But, for example, and this is a guy that I have, you know, always had good experiences with and stuff, but I'm pretty sure that Mike Kliss is still a Baseball Hall of Fame voter, and Mike Kliss hasn't covered baseball in like 15 years. Not to say that he doesn't watch baseball, but it's different to be asked to vote on guys' careers and if they should make the most hallowed Hall of Fame in all of sports when you've been covering the NFL draft 99% of your time.
When you haven't tried to learn anything new for a decade.
Right. And that's, again, it's not a shot at Mike Kliss. I think it's just an outdated model on how these guys should be selected. And for somebody like Larry Walker, I think the line of logic that follows somebody like Walker around is people who haven't had to watch baseball in recent years look at it and go, Larry Walker, he played in Coors Field. It was a launching pad, not even going to consider it. And they don't
play there in the 90s, right? You know, yeah, no chance.
They don't put the dedication of the time into understanding Larry Walker outside of Coors Field slash 271, 372, 501 with a 141 OPS plus. That's pretty damn good.
That is pretty damn good.
Reggie Jackson, by comparison, slash for his career, 262, 356, 490, all of those substantially lower with a 139 OPS plus. Larry Walker, for whatever reason, never gets any consideration for the fact that he was a fantastic defensive player. He was a terrific base runner. He did everything. So I think, you know, through any objective analysis, Larry Walker has Hall of Fame numbers and a Hall of Fame career. Two things harm him. One is Coors Field. That harms him more than anything. The other thing was his health. But a player can't control his health. So, right. I mean, in my book, he's a Hall of Famer. But I think even if I was a Giants fan or if I was a Cardinals fan or if I was a Marlins fan, if I looked at Larry Walker's career, I would think he was a Hall of Famer because the numbers bear it out, and they bear it out outside of Coors Field. They bear it out with the ballpark adjustments. All when you account for Coors Field, he's still a Hall of Famer. So yeah, it's heading in the right direction, but still.
Right. He is and that's great. I was always of the ilk, like even coming into this offseason or the last couple of years, I was like, you know, Larry was a really nice player, but I don't think he played long enough. It was never the issue of his talents or his numbers, in my opinion. I mean, I really don't think that he had played long enough. And then, you know, the wave started to turn more toward Larry Walker this year without any help from anybody in the local media market at all. And you're starting to see more people see his candidacy in an objective fashion and not just thinking lol Coors. And the points to be made are incredibly valid, especially now with a guy like Vladimir Guerrero in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Now, Vlad should be a Hall of Famer, I think. Yeah. I think they did a good job putting him in there. And he had, you know, what, 70 more home runs ish at 120 more RBI or 130 more RBI or whatever than Larry Walker did in his career, played a few more games, that's fine. But
for Vlad to go in at 92.9% of the vote,
and for Larry Walker to get 30%,
when
I mean, that doesn't
so
make
many of Walker's numbers
of
are
sense.
Better. Yeah, exactly.
And you look at, you know, just see Jay Jaffe, who wrote a Cooperstown casebook about guys who should be in the Hall of Fame, should not be in the Hall of Fame. He's firmly on the side that Larry Walker should be in the Hall of Fame, but he was also a guy who didn't think so initially. But going through all the data, parsing through some numbers, home road, OPS plus, park factors, all that stuff that you can kind of normalize a guy like Larry Walker, who played at a ballpark that was obviously very offensive friendly, he still made the cut. I mean, Larry Walker's career wins above replacement, nearly 73, just a tick below what an average Hall of Fame right fielder is right now. I mean, you're seeing, like, even with the fact that he was hurt a number of ways, like he was had a parts of his career cut off by the strike in 1994 and 1995. You know, he got a late start to his career because he was a hockey player. He didn't play baseball up until he was probably in high school. You know, and then even in his minor league career, he had to go through a couple of rough seasons. He played 4 years in the minor leagues before he even got a sniff at the big leagues. So, you know, he was an older player when he made his debut. He was 23, 24. But, you know, he was able to really make a slow start to his career, then pick it up as he became more comfortable with the game, comfortable in the big leagues. And he started putting up crazy numbers, even in Montreal. I mean, his last year in Montreal, that strike shortened season, he OPS 981, hit, you know, 19 homers, 86 ribbies in 103 games, batted 322. I mean, he was putting up numbers or starting to put up those kind of numbers that we saw him put up in Colorado before he even came to the Rockies in the 1995 season. But it's hard to believe that there weren't a lot of different people stumping for him. It seemed like there was a lot of his candidacy. People started to like Larry Walker this year more than ever. And I'm not really sure why. I'm not complaining, obviously, because he only has, what, two more years on the ballot to try to get that 75%.
Yeah.
And it's very unlikely, in my opinion, unless he gets a massive, massive boost. To go 40% in 2 years, that's going to be tough for Larry.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't really know why the tide started to turn toward Larry Walker this year, but hopefully it can just become, you know, much more of a rising tide in the next couple of seasons, because you want to get guys like the At Rockies account. You want to get some of the local guys. You know, Ryan Spielberg didn't have Larry Walker in his Hall of Fame ballot.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and I get that there is this dichotomy with what you want for your local beat guys. You don't want them to just, you know, be those water carriers like Mike Kliss is for the Denver Broncos. And I understand you don't want that. But I think when a guy has been retired for so long, you can look back at his career objectively and be like, you know what? I think he should be a Hall of Fame candidate. Like, I mean, you saw what the local media has done for the Broncos for so long in their Hall of Fame cases. Woody Page has been in the war room making Hall of Fame cases for the Broncos players since the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Like, literally making the speeches to the voters, trying to get them to vote for Floyd Little and Carl Mecklenburg and Steve Atwater and all those guys. Like, passionate, passionate things that eventually ended up working for the most part. You don't see any of that with Rockies beat writers or anybody around. And I don't really know why. I mean, I understand you want to keep your objectivity to guys that are still playing because, you know, you don't want to seem like you're a homer now. But I think when you can look back on it and guys' careers, Larry Walker's been retired for, you know, over a decade now. Why can't you go back and try to remind people how great Larry Walker was for the city of Denver, for the city of Montreal, even for St. Louis when he went there and they went to the World Series that year in 2004. They loved him there. You know, I don't know why he doesn't get that kind of love from his local beat writers. Hopefully the next year, that couple years that he can. Guys who covered him, even guys like Troy Rank, who does the Broncos now. Why can't Troy Rank be a guy who can, you know, make some passionate cases for Larry Walker? Because the only local guy I saw really doing it was Tracy Ringlesby.
Larry Walker went from 97 votes in 2017, 21.9% of the vote, to 144 votes this year, 34.1% of the vote. So a fairly substantial increase. But again, he's got two more years on the ballot. Is it going to be enough to continue getting that push? I mean, it's going to take a lot. And unfortunately, the only way in which you can do it is, having a megaphone that gets those numbers and gets that case in front of people. And make sure that people listen to it beyond just the, yeah, I'll give consideration to maybe the fact that it wasn't the ballpark. I mean, you have to understand the full scope.
Then that's of the Larry first Walker's step. Career. That's like admitting you right. have a problem. Like,
right, exactly. Basically.
The 12 steps. That's yeah. the first one.
So I'm hopeful. I also, you know, ESPN in the most ESPN thing possible took just the line about Coors Field out of Larry Walker's quote, slapped it on a photo of Larry Walker and tweeted it out. And Larry Walker quote tweeted it and said, this is why I don't do interviews. This isn't what I was trying to say at all. And so, wait, is this, can you hear that? Can you hear that audio?
Just for a second.
You know how much I hate autoplay videos?
Yeah, they suck.
They're terrible. But, oh my God, especially because it's about the Tom Brady documentary, Shoot Yourself, sports.
Don't make out with your son.
So I think, you know, it's something that needs to still be, I don't know, still be pushed. And unfortunately, we don't live in a media market that's loud enough to get it in front of the dozens and dozens and dozens of voters who have no interest in looking at it objectively. I don't know.
Nope.
I don't know.
Not a chance. But, you know, like I said, I think hopefully in next year we'll see maybe get to 50 next year.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with this final year on the ballot, really get the tide to turn.
You make
like,
one
I miss
big
Jonah.
Push.
Jonah right. Carey left Twitter, which sucks. You know, he sucks for everyone.
We
he's not around
that
he anymore.
Was back. No, he's back.
Oh, he's doing like a.
But is it just like automated now?
Yeah, I think so.
That's
like
right.
When he does like a podcast, something like that, then it just pops up, but it's not.
Yeah. That. Yeah, that's right.
Which is too bad.
Yeah, that is.
Because, like,
I
he
envy
was.
That.
He was basically the guy who got
Tim Raines into the Hall of Fame.
Like, almost single-handedly.
Yeah.
And Tim Raines should have been a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
It should have been a Hall of Famer a long time ago, and I'm glad he did. But it's going to take something like that, I think, to get Larry Walker into the Hall of Fame.
Super famous celebrity from Colorado. I feel like maybe we should get, like, we should try to get, like, Amy Adams behind this. She's famous.
Wasn't Tim Allen born in Denver?
Yeah, but he's, like, a psycho right-winger. He probably thinks Coors Field is, like, you know, he'll blame it on the libs and they're crying about climate change or something. he's a lunatic. So anyway, we obviously
we
both think
get
Larry
Jonah
Walker's
on it because
yeah,
Jonah's in Denver. Jonah's a Denver.
Come on, Joe. And it's Larry
and
started as an expo.
Guy.
Exactly.
He's a Canadian.
Man,
you're the perfect guy to get Jonah involved.
Come on.
Let's give Jonah a call.
We've had this discussion before. I never, you know, you and I both worked in media for a while now. I don't get nervous when I do interviews or when I meet people or whatever. But Larry Walker, meeting Larry Walker for, God, I wonder what episode that was that we had Larry Walker on the show. But meeting him at the, it was back in the first season of the PDP. So it was, no, it would have been the second season of the PDP, 2015. But we had Larry Walker and Dante Bichette and Dick Monfort. And it was, meeting Larry Walker was like, oh my God, this is my childhood hero.
Yeah. He'd be the one guy, I think.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I'd be like, oh yeah, all right, this is cool.
What episode would that have been? Let's go try to find that. In case you want to go, it was the back in the 20th anniversary season of Coors Field, the 95 wildcard team. They invited a whole bunch of players back, and then in very fitting Rockies fashion, the game got rained out. Actually, I think it got snowed out. And so that
very
was,
Rockies fashion. Then
so that
yeah.
was exciting. Yeah, it was back in 2015. I don't know. Go back and look it up, you weirdos.
I'm not gonna do it. I don't care.
What else did we say we were gonna talk about here today?
I don't know. I think that's pretty much it. I don't know.
It was episode number 42, by the way. It was May 3rd, 2015. Episode number 42. Larry Walker, Dante Bichette. Who else did we have? David Need. That's right. Yeah. Actually, I don't think I talked to Dick Monfort. I don't think we had him. Maybe we did have him on the show. I don't remember. It was the Jackie Robinson edition of the Purple Dinosaur podcast.
Yeah.
I thought we had like one more topic. Oh, spring training.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Rockies pitchers and catchers officially report on the 14th. The first team workout for the Rockies is on the 19th. And then games start basically at the beginning of March. But we're both going to be there. We will cross over. Very exciting. I am heading down there on the 17th, which, you know, given both who I am as a person who works way too much and somebody who has never been cool enough to party, I didn't even remember that was St. Patrick's Day. By the way, February 23rd, not the first week in March. They start spring training games on February 23rd. That's 15 days away. Holy smokes.
I mean, opening day is March 29th.
God, that's exciting. Yeah. But yeah, so I get down there on the night of the 17th. You are going to be there that weekend as well.
Yes.
So we will we'll be doing a show.
Yeah, I will be down there the 16th, actually. Probably in, for the 1 o'clock games on the 16th, wherever they may be.
They play the Angels. They'll be in Tempe. That place, sneaky difficult to get a ticket at Tempe Diablo
yeah.
Stadium.
And also Tempe Diablo Stadium is one of the less nice ballparks in
See, I kind of like it. I don't know why. I like that big mountain out beyond left field.
It's fine.
It's weird. It like backs up to the highway, like the interstate. If somebody just murdered a ball over right field, it would be like bouncing onto the interstate. Not really, because there's a giant parking lot behind right field. But still, but it's a tricky place to get a ticket. So if you are planning on going down to Arizona and checking out a Rockies Angels game in Tempe, you should like get your tickets now, because it's you can't show up to an Angels game on game day
and
get a
ticket. And for the Angels now, they are going to be very excited. They're going to sell a lot of tickets for the Shohei Ohtani show.
Right.
So good luck with that one.
Yeah. But the point of all this is we will have a spring training episode for you. We'll probably record it on the 18th. Presumably.
We'll be back before then, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Stuff to happen.
When things start really happening, we'll be back. But somebody had asked us on SPDP the other day or if we would be doing a spring training episode. So just wanted to let all of you nerds know that we will. But if you are headed down to spring training or anything, hit us up, because Anthony and I have both been lucky enough to go for the last few years, and it's so much fun. Going to spring training is my favorite week of the year every year.
I love it. I love it so much.
You know, just the atmosphere of it. Everybody's happy. Everybody's excited, but it's laid back. The weather's amazing. It's just so much fun. It's so cool. And I love the Phoenix area. I've got a very biased opinion toward it because I've only been there in like March or October or November, last week of September last year for your wedding. So I haven't been. If I would go like in July, I think I would want to die there. But you know, I every time I'm down there, I'm like, oh, it's 82 and perfect today. It's sunny.
Even for my wedding
here. Yeah, exactly.
For my wedding weekend in September, it was 82.
It was
sunny.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
So I love the Phoenix area. And so if you've got questions on which ballparks are best to check out or restaurants or places to stay or whatever, Josh Jackson from MILB.com, he and I are going down and we're staying like right between Phoenix and Scottsdale. So we're like right in the heart of everything, which I'm very excited about. And I'm pumped, man. It's the best week of the year. So I'll be there the 17th and coming back here on the 23rd. Anthony will be there the 16th and heading back, I don't know, at some point.
So if you're in town,
in a body bag.
What?
Because I'm going to kill you. JK. Not really. Love you. Yeah, so come hang out. Let us know. And we'd love to hang out and catch up and all the things.
Yeah.
I'm going to go see if I can shake this Biggie dream from my head. I'm shook.
You're all weird. Right.
I guess that'll do it.
That'll do it. Well... hope this was fun
be hitting the old
for all of you.
Trail. buy our shirts. Purple Dinosaur Podcast on BigCartel.com. Man, I got to think of a new shirt idea for 2018.
Yeah, we got to talk to Humble Monster.
Yeah, we do. We certainly do. Ordinarily, I keep like a running list during the season of shirts that I think would be great, but I don't know if I added anything to them last year. I wish that the ballpark name was not a corporate name.
I know.
So then we could do like... hashtag Coors, but it was something else because we can't get away with just doing Coors. But that would be the perfect Rockies Twitter t-shirt, and we can't do it.
Didn't we find out that we can't just add O's?
Because that was my suggestion. It's like, why don't we just add a bunch of O's? And Tyler said he was going to look into it, and then we never heard back, so I'm assuming that we can't.
Yeah. We should probably talk to Tyler.
But at some point, we're going to have something new for you in 2018 to waste your money on. I want to make a purple shirt this year. We haven't had a purple shirt. We've done black shirts in the past. I want to do a purple shirt this year. So maybe that'll be part of the task. Anyway, now I'm just rambling. We'll talk to you whether it's when pitchers and catchers report or later on in the month. We'll talk to you and let us know if you're going to hit up spring training. You can find us on Twitter at Purple Dino Cast. That's it. Love you.
Love you.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.
yeah, I mean, when I tried to sign in and it was like, derp. And I said, okay. But
I hate more than anything when you log in and it's like, derp to anything, really.
Yeah.
Not even
especially
just
when I like, yeah, when I'd like talk to humans.
Right. Right. Like when I talk to you.
Yeah. And I was like, derp. Because that's what you sound like.
You. That's what you sound like.